if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 173. This is our 2021 Scottish Open and John Deere Classic Tips and Selections podcast. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's European and PGA Tour golf. Good morning, gents. How are we?
Morning, guys. Yeah, very well. You?
Good morning.
Yeah, we're all right. It's a bit rainy over here in the UK, but we'll get through that. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And of course, we know that you do. Please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous Golf Betting System website with our in-depth betting previews. There's masses of tournament statistics. We've got our strokes gain data on the John Deere Classic and our predictor models, all available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We're available on social media. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the golf betting show every week. Please subscribe and like the shows. I'll be doing this week's John Deere Classic show after we finished this podcast record, which we're doing Tuesday morning in the UK. Now, I put out a plea for 5-star Apple podcast reviews, and we've had, I wouldn't say an influx, but we've certainly had a few. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, because we need more of them, I will read them out at the start of a future show. And don't forget, of course, we are coming up to two Open Championship podcasts. We've got a research podcast later this week, and we've also got the Tips podcast, which I think we might be recording next Monday or Tuesday morning latest. So leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That is the least you can do. It effectively drives the popularity of the podcast. Right. I've got one here from Rob. And Rob is in Falkirk in Scotland. Its title is The Best Golf Podcast in the World! 5 stars. I didn't know anyone who loved betting on golf as passionately as me until I found this podcast. The three guys are excellent and very knowledgeable about golf and golf betting. If you bet on golf, you must listen to this show. The must is in capitals. Steve, Paul and Barry, on behalf of all of your regular listeners, thank you for your great work and good luck at the Irish Open and Rocket Mortgage this week. Well, that's very nice of you, Rob. Thank you. Thank you for your 5-star review.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah, cheers, Rob. There wasn't a great deal of luck at the Irish Open and the Rocket Mortgage from his message, but the sentiment is very well received, so thanks.
Maybe the luck will carry over this week. Thank you very much for that, Rob. It's nice to hear from fellow degenerates.
Absolutely.
My tips, I had a miscut Scott Piercy. I had Maverick McNeely in 21st. I had Jason Day in 14th, and I had Seamus Power in a tie for 8th at 15 under. He shot 67 on Sunday and only jumped 4 spots on the leaderboard. It was that kind of tournament. So I had I also had Matthew Wolf, who ended up 58th.
He started well though, Wolf, didn't he?
Yeah, he played. Tee to green was fantastic. The putter was ice. You can't putt at 1.9 and win a 18-under par birdie fest. That ain't going to work. So it boiled down to Cam Davis, Troy Merritt, who I did have a very good look at, and Joaquin Neiman in a playoff.
You did talk about Joaquin last week, Steve.
I did.
Yeah.
I think I spoke about them all apart from Cam Davis, who I didn't have a lot of interest in. But you look at how DeChambeau had pulled that course apart the year before. Davis did kind of fit the mould. I mean, Davis and Neiman now, they're probably two of the longest in the field last week, weren't they? Absolute, you know, power off the tee. And Merritt, more of a short court, more of a kind of scrambler and a fantastic putter, which he top strokes game. Yeah, he top strokes game putting last week, Merritt.
He drove it very well. He was just hitting lasers down there. I mean, do you know what? It was really exciting on the back nine on Sunday. There were just birdies flying everywhere. And if you were making par, you were going backwards. We got Seamus through into a quarter. His place was quartered, which really stung because he was at good odds last week. You just knew he needed one more birdie. And that eagle chip on 17 came up a few inches short and... he had a chance on 18. He didn't leave it short either, from what I could tell on Shot Tracker. So, really good week for Seamus. So close, and you feel there's something coming, like something big, and we hope it clicks, because these like almost places or quartered places, they kind of sting when he's playing so well. From our perspective on gambling, but I'm sure from his as well. Like he's three shots out of the playoff over the whole week.
Yeah, top tens work for him, don't they? You know, any of those players helps. If they're struggling for a start or Monday qualifying or alternates, then getting a top 10 is good, isn't it?
He's still sitting a 140 in the FedEx Cup rankings.
Yeah, but it feels like
he's been in the places for the last time immemorial. I think he's had two top 10s and two top 20s in his last four appearances, and he's still at 140 in the FedEx Cup playoffs. For listeners that are new to golf, to hold full playing privileges for next season, you need to A, be a winner, or B, finish in the top 125 of the FedEx Cup. So, the scramble to get in that top 125 for pros is absolutely huge. There is also a 126 through 150 category, which would mean that you'd still be playing PGA Tour next year, or next season, but you won't get into the big tournaments in that category. That's what, minimum 150 on the FedEx Cup is what players are playing for this year.
He just needs one good week, like a top five or top three would really sort him out. A win takes care of everything, as you say. But it's getting down to the real tight end of the season. Just looking at the schedule here, I mean, he's got what? John Deere, Barbasol, if he plays it, which is, if he wins this week, he gets a spot in the Open Championship, right? Then there's the 3M, Barracuda, and the Wyndham. I don't think he's getting into the WGCs unless he gets a win. So, there's only five events left for him to put in that one big week or a couple of more top tens.
Top three, top four, something like that, do it though.
Sorted,
quite reasonable.
Yeah. I was counting it up this morning. You're right. There's five PGA Tour events left. There's the John Deere Classic. You've got the Barbasol Championship, which is an alternate event like next week. 3M Open. You've then got the Barracuda and then the Wyndham Championship. Those are the five left before we go into the playoffs. I'm just trying to look here. It was Hank Lebioda, wasn't it? Who was he jumped from 114 to 94. So he's now safe after last week. In fact, he's safe after the last 2 weeks. He finished fourth and jumped 20 spots in the FedEx Cup.
Yeah. That's what you need.
So he needs a top five power, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good tournament. I quite enjoyed the tournament round. There was just enough win the first 3 days. I mean, it was a soft golf course, as we said, Thursday, Friday. But it was always that, it was 20 miles an hour on Thursday, and Friday it was gusting 25 miles an hour. So that kept the lid on the scoring. And then Sunday, pan calm, all of a sudden your likes of Keziah are shooting 8-under with Alex Nurin.
The Detroit Fire Department was busy Saturday night going into Sunday morning, was it?
I just think it was always soft. It was just that there was no wind on Sunday whatsoever. So yeah. it was lights out, 64s, here we come. So yeah, good tournament. Congratulations. A lot of people were on Cam Davis, so well played. A lot of people were also on Wacky. I think that top three in the playoff, there were a lot of punters on those three players. So well played.
Yeah,
to
a lot
everybody.
Of merit as well.
Yeah. What about you in Scotland, Paul? Scotland, Ireland, apologies.
Ireland, yeah, no, four picks. Horsfield withdrew. I've not seen a definitive reason, but it sounds like there was a bit of a niggle there, which caused him to withdraw. The other three all had chances of at least placing. All of them finished in a tie for 12th, which is no good. Andy Sullivan was probably the one that was most disappointing because he was hovering around favouritism or second favourite for much of the event. And two steps forward, one back every time. And again, similar to yours, you can't make those mistakes. You can't give up those shots when you're chasing down what's a relatively low score. So, yeah, he kind of flattered to deceive. Aaron Rye put a decent shift in on the Saturday and then just couldn't move forward enough on the Sunday. Adrian Ategi at various points looked like he could push forward for a place at 80-1. But yeah, in the end, they all finished in the tie for 12th, which is a couple of shots out of the places and doesn't help your returns whatsoever.
They're good picks, though. I know it hurts like to miss like almost crossbar on a few of them, but it's, you know, to know that your picks are that close, that's you got to take a little bit of confidence from it on a week where you've taken a bit of a battering. It's good. Like, I mean, Herbert, that's really impressive. It's like taking a couple of top 20s over on the PGA Tour and just come over here and going, oh, this is easy. Bang, win.
Yeah. I mean, you only got away with the few on Sunday, though. But I think
you have to.
You know, that tends to happen, doesn't it? I guarantee if my player had been up there and he starts spraying about like Lucas Herbert did on the Sunday, he'd have been shooting six over, not getting the job done. But that's by the by. Things will change, won't they?
We said yesterday, didn't we, about Cam Davis chipping in out of the bunker on 17. If that had been our player, they'd have been making three out of the bunker.
It would have been instantly replaced.
And we'd have ended up
Paul.
In a tie for 21st.
Yeah, you'd have gone from a position of potentially winning to missing in each way place.
Did you see poor Francesco Laporta make double bogey on the 18th to miss out in the Open Championship?
The lines are so fine, aren't they?
That was brutal. It was so cruel. And then Carlberg chipping in for birdie to get his spot. Like, so the good and the bad all in a few minutes.
All right, Barry, we're 12 minutes in. We have to move on. We're desperate, listeners, to try and keep this to about an hour. So we're going to move on. The feature event of this week is the Scottish Open, the week before the Open Championship. So I will hand you over to Paul Williams for this section of the pod. Over you go.
Yeah, the Scottish Open, second Rolex Series of the event of the season. And now we've had that schedule restored to some kind of normality after last year's issues. The Scottish Open precedes the Open Championship as it was intended. So back to some kind of normality, which is good. Last week, the Irish Open was a Parkland track. So in the past, over the last two or three years, we've seen a number of players come over, a number of the big names come over and play either the Irish Open or the Scottish Open to kind of sharpen their tools ahead of the Open Championship. But with last week being Parkland, with this week being Lynx-E, I'll say rather than Lynx, we've got a far stronger field have come over for this week rather than last. And I mean, that's reflected by the betting. I've run through some of the names at the top because it is, for a European Tour event, it really is strong. John Rahm leads the betting at 8-1. That's the best price. He's round about sevens generally, coming straight from the back of his first major win at Torrey Pines a couple of weeks back. Xander's 14-1, Colin Morikawa's 14-1, Rory McIlroy 18-1, Justin Thomas 20-1, Tyrrell Hatton's 22-1 best price. Scotty Scheffler's 28's been nibbled in a little bit. Matt Fitzpatrick 30-1, Tommy Fleetwood 33-1, 40-1 bar those. But even beyond that, you've got the names such as Corey Connors, Will Zalatoris has come over, Sam Burns, a number of really strong players. And then you've got some of the guys at the top end of the European Tour there as well, like Bob McIntyre. There's plenty of quality in this week's field. And I saw tweeted that this is the strongest Scottish Open field that there ever has been. And that's no surprise to me, looking at the field and the betting that's out there this week. Very much looking forward to it. Just in terms of the betting, one thing to say, in terms of the extended places, all of the action shifted from the PGA Tour over to the European Tour this week. So whereas you were seeing 8 and maybe 10 places over on the PGA Tour, that's those market options, those terms have been shifted over. So do shop around. One of the deals that we mentioned last week, Coral, has been extended actually until the end of Sunday this week. So they're going 8 places each way on this event. They're going 8 places each way on your event, Steve, over at the John Deere Classic.
They are.
And their bet 5, get 30 and 30 free spins offer has been extended until Sunday at midnight after the football has finished. Full T's and C's apply, of course. Check the T's and C's and the link out on the website if you fancy a bit of that deal. 8 places each way, as I say, on the Scottish Open. Onto the track, Renaissance Club. It's the third year on the trot that we've seen this track. So if you're checking through the stats on the site, last year, 2020, 2019, both played here at Renaissance. Prior to that, it was at various different Scottish Open tracks, so do bear that in mind. The track sits on Scotland's Gulf Coast, sits between Muirfield and Archerfield links on the coast up there in Scotland. Essentially, though, for purists, it's a manufactured links. It was opened in 2008. It's designed to look like it had been there for 100 years, but you can tell the difference subtly between these manufactured new links and those that have been around for time immemorial. In terms of features, though, standard affair: gorse, thick rough, some seaside holes, pot bunkers, normal kind of linksy look and feel to it. In terms of the raw setup, par 71, 7,293 yards. Fescue green, so you're looking at the likes of Castle Stewart, which used to host this event. Royal Birkdale for the 2017 Open Championship was on fescue greens. And of course, the last 2 years that have been held here at Renaissance as well. And with any of these tracks, the scoring is completely weather dependent. If it's calm, if it's soft, if there's not much happening in terms of the weather, then these tracks tend to be extremely scorable. They're exposed, they're open to attack by the professionals. If there's wind around, if there's rain around, if there's conditions that make it tougher, then the scoring can be quite a lot higher. This year, looking at the forecast, I mean, over the last couple of days, there's been flash floods throughout the UK and up that side of Scotland as well. It's been quite wet. I saw some pictures yesterday of it absolutely hammering down with rain by the course yesterday. For the days itself, for the tournament days, it looks like it's going to be fine. Looks like it's going to be dry. Looks like it's going to be sub 10 miles an hour winds. 18, 19 degrees centigrade, so mid-60s Fahrenheit. Soft conditions. I think these guys are going to absolutely rip the course to shreds this week. That's kind of reflected if you look at the two renewals that we've had so far. So 2019 was won by Bernd Wiesberger at 22 under. He was a 40 to 1 shot. Wiesberger made 30 birdies during the course of that those 4 weeks. 30 birdies.
30 birdies. That's madness.
That's pretty good going, isn't it? He shot 22 under, got 30 birdies, and won at 40 to 1. Aaron Rye, it's a mad stat, isn't it?
That is a 42% birdie rate.
Oh, dear. Can you imagine getting that to 36 and birdieing literally every other hole in the entire wow. tournament? It'd be mad, wouldn't it? So 30 birdies for Wiesberg. Aaron Rye, it was tougher in the autumn last year. There was wind, there was rain, tougher conditions generally. Aaron Rye won at 11 under, and he was a 50 to 1 shot. For me, the conditions suggest it's going to be far more like 2019 than 2020. So I would suggest 20-ish under par is going to be the winning score, and birdies are going to be the currency big style this week. And again, if you go back to those stats from 2019, literally everyone in the top 40 was hitting at least 70% of greens in regulation. When it's easy here, when the conditions are good, then finding greens isn't the issue. It's proximity to a hole. It's putting when you get an opportunity to make a birdie. Attacking the par fives as well. Fiesberger was 13 under for the par fives out of his total of 22 under. So you need to attack those par fives in good conditions. You need to get the ball close. You need to roll in a few of your putts. And if you can get anywhere near making 30 birdies, then you may well get close to winning this week at Renaissance. Looking at those two guys again, both of them had finished second on their previous start in Ireland. So some very recent form could well be a good indicator here. And in fact, if you go back, I knew Brandon Stone, he won in 2018, and he was a 400-to-1 shot on a different track, of course. He's the only one who, out of the last, 11 renewals, going back to 2010, hadn't had a top 10 finish in one of their previous four starts. So if you're looking for the outright winner, someone who's got some very recent contending form would be a good indicator, a good starting point, it would seem, historically, unless you're going to be able to pluck out a Brandon Stone 400-to-1 shot showing absolutely no form coming into the event. In terms of event form, Aaron Ryde finished ninth at Gullen on his debut a couple of years before, but didn't have any specific course form. In fact, he missed the cut on his one start at Renaissance, so that wasn't much of a clue. And if you go back prior to that, Fiesberger, Brandon Stone, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, the three previous winners, none of those guys had any specific Scottish Open form really either. Prior to that, there was some good indicators in terms of the winners and previous form in the Scottish Open. Why the Scottish form would probably be more of an indicator for me, and maybe the Dunhill Links as being something that's scorable in terms of correlating to this week. You've got the Scottish Championship and some other events, Paul Laurie Match Play over the years, where you could have a little dig in and see some Scottish form wider than just the Scottish Open, which of course hops about from venue to venue. It is a Rolex Series event though this week, $8 million prize fund. And if you go through the list, I put a full list of the Rolex Series winners on my preview this week if you want to check them out. It's tended to be, not exclusively, but it's tended to be a classy sort who's got over the line on these events. We've seen a few Rolex Series events where you've got some lesser names right in the mix, and then as you get right to the business end, you know, these guys are staring at a $2 million payday. That can tighten things up a little bit, I think. So the guy who's actually tended to prevail has been one who's quite comfortable picking up that kind of check and walking away with the money. Other things to note, three more Open Championship places are up for grabs this week. Again, that's players not in the top 10 players who finish in the top 10 who are not already qualified for the Open. So there's going to be a carrot dangled there for some of the players to try and get a late spot in next week's affair at the at Sandwich for the Open Championship. Boiling it all down though, this is a coastal track, it's links-like, low scoring, Scottish form seems good, someone who's hitting the ball nicely in terms of approach play, putting, Dunhill Links form, as I said a few seconds ago, that seems to be one that's it could be well worth a look. So I went around the houses with this a bit. I had an absolutely horrendously long shortlist, or long list as it was. So I've managed to whittle it down to six players this week. Top of the market, John Rahm, Xander, Morikawa. They're all making debuts here this week. Not that that's too much of an issue, I don't think, because these guys are well capable of winning a golf tournament like this. But I think these guys at the top, they should be more about focusing on next week and just getting acclimatised and you know, working through the bag this week, getting themselves in the right kind of shape and form to attack the Open next week at Royal St George's. McIlroy, Justin Thomas, both of those guys have actually got some practical experience here. McIlroy was 34th here in 2019. Justin Thomas was 9th. And both have got their challenges, though. Thomas, there was a little bit of a spark with the putter last time out, but he's still been struggling a bit. McIlroy, what did he finish last week? 59th or something like that. It was way down the field. So things aren't quite right. And I think you said, Barry, he's been out practicing out in Ireland, getting a bit of extra linksy practice over the last couple of days. So, yeah, I expect this is more just a preparation rather than a full-out attack to try and win the Scottish Open for these guys at the top. Ultimately, that leads me to Tyrrell Hatton as my headline this week. I backed him yesterday at 20-1, 8 places each way, and he's been pushed out to 22s this morning, which probably says something about how my tips have been going over the last couple of weeks. But yeah, anywhere that, around that bracket, 20-1 or thereabouts, good price on Hatton, I think. World number 10. He's won 3 of the last 8 Rolex Series events. He's extremely comfortable at this kind of level. And if you add in his 2017 Italian Open win, that means his last 4 wins, all in the European Tour, have all been Rolex Series level wins. He's accumulated an awful lot of dollars, as it is with the Rolex Series events, into his bank account over the last few years from Rolex. All 6 of his wins in the European Tour have come between 18 and 24 under par, which is perfect. The other 2 wins that I haven't mentioned were both at the Dunhill Links Championship. And again, I think there's a clear correlation between that kind of setup and scoring and what we should experience this week at Renaissance. He was 14th here on debut, 1st for strokes gained approach, 4th for strokes gained tee to green. So got on with the test from tee to green very, very nicely. Just needed to putt a little bit better. And we know with Tyrrell, when he can putt or when he does putt, he can be extremely good. 2nd at Palmetto a couple of weeks back on the PGA Tour. Missed a cut at the US Open. I'm not bothered about that. If you go back and look at his recent history, he won the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth last year, having missed the cut at the US Open on his previous start. A couple of weeks off now, time to reset. He's got the Olympics off his mind. He's decided that he's not going to represent. So it's back to business for me for Tyrrell Hatton this week. And ultimately, he's just immensely comfortable at this Rolex Series level. So I can see him getting the job done this week, Tyrrell, at 20-1 or thereabouts. Next was Guido Migliozzi. Really good at the US Open, wasn't he? He was outstanding.
My old mucker Guido.
Yeah, you put him up at Travellers, was it?
He was another one, a shot outside the each way places, yeah. But that form, because especially when you look at Lucas Herbert, who'd been over in the States, and he Monday qualified at one event, and then he went, was it mid-20s, I think he finished at the Travellers, came across back to the Irish Open, won. Absolutely, so that kind of, getting that kind of confidence boost in the United States and coming back to Euro Tour level, I could see that working for Guido.
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, so Guido was 13th. Yeah, Lucas was slightly outside of that and turned that PGA form into a win. And these correlations can tend to follow through, can't they? It was only John Rahm who beat Guido in this field at the US Open. Everyone else was either tied or worse than him. And that was just an outstanding major championship debut from the young Italian, but it shouldn't have been a surprise, really. He'd been runner-up twice in Europe for his previous 2 events prior to that. As you've just said, 13th at the Travellers on his most recent start, which was good form. He's played here once. He was 6th to halfway back in 2019. 6th for strokes gained approach, 9th for strokes gained tee to green that week in terms of his overall performance. He still lost strokes getting on, he lost strokes putting on the greens back then a couple of years back, but he's generally putting much better now. I think he's more of an accomplished player. And that feeling of having rubbed shoulders and contended with some of the guys at the very top of golf has got to rub through on his game, I think, and give him an extra boost of confidence. So I'm on Guido at 55-1. I'm also on Andrew Johnson Beef at 80-1, who seems far, far happier, far more settled in his life than he did a year or so ago. He was not in a great place 12 months ago. The confines of the COVID bubble and everything was just weighing down on him a bit. But he seems much happier. Family life's good. Little girl growing up a little bit now, and he seems in a good place, Beef, and I think that can translate into something even more tangible with his game and his results over the next few weeks and months. He's scoring well as well. He shot a 63 in Gran Canaria, shot a 63 in Tenerife, and for me, I tend to class Beef as more of a grinder, but when you're also seeing low rounds like that and some decent finishes, he's fourth in Tenerife, and that was a really low scoring affair. That shows you that there's something really strong percolating in his game. 14th in Germany, 9th in Ireland, last two starts. Both times it was just one low round. Tended to be on the Fridays, those two that were letting him down. But if he can string four rounds together at some point, he's going to go very, very close to winning. Because all aspects of his game are looking good, every part of it. He's firing at various points. Scottish form, he won his maiden challenge tour event in Scotland back in the day. He was fourth here in 2019 in very similar conditions as well, so he proved he could score on this kind of track in these kind of conditions. So yeah, quite happy to take Andrew Johnston at 80-1, Beef. Three longer prices to finish. Richie Ramsey up back to 175-1. He was 34th here in 2019. He came in far, far worse form back then, a couple of years back. Opened with a 65, closed with a 67, which is half decent. More recently, 10 out of the last 11 cuts made, and he's been in contention a couple of times, sat in third place heading into the weekend a couple of times over the last couple of months. Finished fourth last week, and I mentioned in the preamble that a strong recent finish from last week could be a good indicator. And that was his best finish for 4 years on tour, and he seems to be putting far better recently, which is a good indicator for this week, I think. Lives in Edinburgh, so this is a home tie in effect. He can just meander up the coast in the mornings and tee it up. Three top tens at the Dunhill Links over the years. Second was his best there. Sixth in this event as well in the past. Lots of Scottish form. Richie Ramsey, 175-1, makes lots of sense to me. As does Matthew Southgate at 200-1. Do you reckon we could be looking at a Sunday Southgate double, Steve?
No. I don't think we will be. I don't think we'll be looking at a Southgate double, but I did tweet it out last night and there was like 20-odd people came back going, that's just crazy, or like the tweet.
Yes.
It's a great bit of prose, that.
No, but, not a chance is the answer. Stranger things have happened, Steve. Let's hope it does. Yeah. I mean, in terms
what's
of...
The, what's the odds of Matthew Southgate winning and England winning the Euros?
Well, yeah, England are 6-4, so yeah, you're getting a decent chunk if you're adding a 200-1 shot with that. Not that I'm suggesting you do the double, guys, because that might be a little bit stretching the imagination. But...
Paul, you have to do it now.
Oh dear, yeah, you may twist my arm there, Barry. Going back to Southgate, second recently at the Porsche European Open. I mean, that's not really his bag, the Porsche European Open. This is much, much more to his liking. He absolutely loves Lynx tracks.
He's a very good shout. That price is lovely, isn't it? He's always that kind of price. Always is.
Yeah. Well, and what gets me is he's generally that price when he's coming in off a string of missed cuts, and he's not.
Is he in the open or is he not?
No, not that I could see. It looks like he's going to have to qualify through this week. So he's got some good Open Championship form in the past, so he'd be keen to tee it up. He's finished 12th and 6th at the Open Championship over the years. 4th and 2nd in the Irish Open. 2010, he won the St Andrews Lynx Trophy as an amateur as well. So bags of Lynx form as well. 9th here last year when it was cold and wet and horrible. I've listened to Southgate talk before about his game, and he talks about how he's a feel player, and he needs that feel in his hands to play shots on and around the greens. And when it's cold and wet and windy, that just negates that for him. So if we go into what will be a more amenable links, warmer, shirt sleeves rather than snoods, then that should be right up his alley, I think. And if he finished 9th when it was tougher last year, then I suspect he could sneak into a place here at 200-1. Really keen on Southgate at 200s. And the final selection this week is Mark Warren at 300-1. Another Scot alongside Richie Ramsey, who I think could go well. And Warren won exactly a year ago, if you believe in biorhythms. It was the first event back after the COVID break. He won in Austria. He was carrying his own bags as they were trying to get their head around and how the COVID protocols were going to work. So he's got that to look back and reminisce on from exactly a year ago. But he's also got a great record in Scotland. He's one of those players that whenever the tour comes to Scotland, regardless of his incoming form, you need to take a look at him because he really does step his game up when he's playing in his homeland. He won the Johnny Walker back in the day, I forget the year, 2007 maybe. Three top fives at the Dunhill Links over the years, four top fours at the Scottish Open. And at Rolex Series level earlier this year, he was fifth at the Abu Dhabi Championship, which is good form. Not much since, but slight signs of some kind of progression. 28th last week in Ireland, and he actually led the field for putts per greens in regulation last week at the Irish Open. So the putter's firing. Mark Warren, when he's playing really well, he's also one of these guys who can notch at 80% plus greens in regulation week. So if you marry that together on a course where hitting green should be far easier this week, and he's also putting well, I think he could go close to a place as well. Mark Warren, there were no first-round leader prizes out when I put my preview out, and I will be looking again this over the course of today. But Warren is also the type who could get a first-round leader quick start as well. So he's one that I'll be taking a very close look at in relation to his tee time when it comes out. But yeah, they're my six. So just working back through in reverse order then. Mark Warren, 300 to 1. Matt Southgate, 200 to 1. Richie Ramsey, 175 to 1. Beef Johnson, 80 to 1. Guido Migliozzi, 55 to 1. And Tyrrell Hatton, 20 to 1. I've backed all of mine 8 places each way, but do check the terms because there's plenty of deals out there this week. That's me. Any thoughts from you guys?
You're going to be out of ammunition with next week coming up, Paul. Or I like a few of the shouts. I like Guido. There's a few others that are kind of catching my eye, like Francesco Molinari. Martin Keimer's been showing some signs of life, and we spoke about him there recently. And you know, hopefully, he can get that win that can kind of possibly get rid of a few of the demons that came into his life out in the Middle East when he lost that 10-shot lead. I've added Guido for sure, and I did a couple of long shots in Kali Samuya, and also Dale Whitnell, who had a good week last week in Ireland.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? He got into the field quite late. I backed him the week before, I think, and he didn't do a great deal. But there's something there with Whitnell. This is the kind of player that I think could pop up in the near future, and you know, a la Marcus Armitage, and you know, that kind of scenario where he could get that maiden win after a few years. So no, I can see where you're coming from with that. Anything from you, Steve?
I'm going to urinate on your strawberries.
Go on then.
I think John Rahm could just come and win this at a canter.
Oh, yeah, he could.
24 under, 19 under, 20 under, 22 under, 19 under. Those are his European Tour victories. Mm. So, yeah. I think I might have a win-only bet on Rahm at 8-1. Yeah, you know, if we're saying that Aaron Rye, Bernd Wiesberger won this after second place finishes, I do agree with Barry on Dale Whitnell. He makes a lot of sense. I think I'm on board with Guido. And the other one I think that's just... I think there's a few European players like Guido who fancy their chances of sneaking into the Ryder Cup team, especially with Perez on the skids. You've got Perez on the skids. You've got Justin Rose in all sorts of trouble with his form. Sergio's kind of flashing and not doing a great deal. Poulter's just kind of top 20-ing and just about on the scene, but he'll get a captain's pick.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if Martin Keimer wins this. I think Martin Keimer's very, very ripe for a victory.
He is close.
And you said in your commentary Alfred Dunhill, Scottish Open, a great links in. Well, he's finished second and first in an Alfred Dunhill. He's clearly a Scottish Open previous winner. I know it was on a different kind of track. But actually, look at the scores he has won at when he used to win. You know, WGC HSBC Champions, 20 under par. Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship, 24 under par. You know, 21 under par again when he won the Abu Dhabi in 2010. That's a kind of score that he comes to the party at. He won the Alfred Dunhill in 2010 at 17 under, beating Danny Willett. Yeah, I could just see Keimer. And I just thought Keimer's price is a bit of an overreaction. Is it 60 to 1 I saw?
Yeah.
70 to 1?
Yeah,
66s with Unibet. Yeah, I know. And that seems to be a great kind of target price when you're looking at previous winners here.
Yeah. It's difficult because I tend to agree that Keimer's got a win in him and got a win in him soon.
His approach play right now is some of the best on the planet. It seemed to me that Juliet was a bit tight for him off the tee. He was 1.5 strokes negative off the tee, and I can imagine that's him kind of firing it into the trees and whatever. I think around here with, you know, easy sight lines, a very soft golf course where the ball's just going to plug in the fairway, and with that approach play, he's going to create a lot of chances this week. Yeah. 66s. I'm on Keimer as well.
Yeah. No. I think the nature of this market and the guys at the very top do make some of those mid to longer prices really, really attractive this week. And with the each way terms, there's a number you could really make a case for. But
just to add to your commentary on Tyrrell Hatton, he was 14.5 strokes gain positive at the Palmetto Championship, tee to green. You won't be surprised to hear he was first in the field, tee to green at the Palmetto. So I think Hatton's going to be another feature as well, as you do.
Yeah, and he absolutely thrives at this level as well.
All I'm thinking is if Keimer was to break the hoodoo, I don't think a Scottish Open before the Open Championship would be a bad place for that to happen. And also, because it's a Rolex Series event, that must boost his in terms of his Ryder Cup qualification, it must go through the roof. I mean, I'm seeing he's kind of fringy on the European points scale at the moment. But a win this week, he'd be right in the mix.
Yeah, he's got so many close finishes, hasn't he, since this qualifying period has started for the Ryder Cup this year. So, I don't know. I'll watch with interest because I'm still not convinced that when it really comes down to it, he's quite worked it out. But I think he will, and the week that he does. I'll be pleased for him whether I'm on him or not. So we shall see.
It sounds like we're kind of in the same territory on both events this week, because clearly the John Deere Classic over in the PGA Tour is another one of these renowned total and utter birdie fests. John Deere, clearly the title sponsor. Deere Run, with an E, is the golf course. It's 70, par 71. It's short. It's gettable, effectively. They make sure that the Illinois Fire Brigade come out before every round to make sure those greens are nice and soft and receptive. And it's target golf, effectively. But it's also a tournament that really does suffer in terms of the field that it gets purely because where it is in the calendar. So it's well renowned that a lot of pros jump on a John Deere funded plane, and as soon as the John Deere's finished, they're up and away and they're heading across to the UK for the Open Championship. So that again will be the case in point this week, flying from Illinois into, I don't know where they'd land, maybe Heathrow or Biggin Hill or something like that, in terms of where the charter flights are coming in for the Open down in Kent. And it's not the best of fields. I think genuinely the field here seems to be getting weaker and weaker. I mean, especially when you're throwing so many top names in at the Scottish Open this week. There's no doubt that we've got a far stronger field over here in Scotland this week than they've got over in Illinois on the PGA Tour this week. But yeah, I'm not expecting anything overly different from what we normally get at the John Deere, which tends to be a very, very low scoring tournament. And when you look at these things and you see champions lists that include 3-time winner Steve Stricker, Zach Johnson, and even Bryson DeChambeau from a few years ago, that kind of tells you that one of the things that we're going to need to do this week is clearly make lots of birdies, which means we need to have a putter that's going to fire. I don't think the scoring conditions are going to be that difficult. In fact, I think they've eased. I'm just looking at the weather forecast right now, actually. We're looking at winds of 7 to 10 miles an hour Thursday, Friday, so nothing there. It looks like a front's coming through potentially over the weekend, so very much in the air there, but it could be blowing as strong as 25 miles an hour on the Sunday, which would make things very interesting. I don't know. I don't see a Michael Kim 27 under par win in this week. I don't think it's going to be quite as extreme as that. I expect with that weather coming in over the weekend, we could be seeing that sort of 22, 23 under par winning score. I think if you're looking for an each way placer this week, they better be shooting 19 under par, something like that. That's the kind of target that players need to be aiming for. In terms of the actual physical golf course and the agronomy, TPC Deer Run, we are looking at a par 71 of 7,268 yards. Waters hazards, there's only 3 of them, so there's not a lot of water on the course. The greens are 5,500 square feet. So pretty similar to what we saw last week in Detroit. They're bent grass greens. So a rarity on the PGA Tour, pure bent grass greens. I got it wrong last week because I mentioned there wasn't a lot of bent grass. I think so far this year there's been Memorial. I forgot Colonial, I think, last week. And we also, of course, there was a Byron Nelson that they played somewhere around Dallas. That was pure bent grass as well.
Yeah.
Throwing the Masters, this is the 5th bent grass event on the PGA Tour this season.
Been a lot of Poana, isn't there?
A lot of Poana, and Bermuda just seems to be permeate everywhere. I know that clearly they follow the weather, don't they? So, Florida and Texas and spots like that before they can play further up country in June and July. But yeah, bent grass pure, it seems to be a bit of a commodity. I think they might be playing the Barbasol next week, the alternate event at Keene Trace, which is Kentucky. That would be bent grass as well. But and that in a way, I think that negatively affects players. I think that's negatively affected Alex Noren, because we've always said Alex is an absolute bent grass monster. Never won on Bermuda grass on the European Tour when I've gone through all of his records.
Yep. Yeah, no, similar.
Bent mixed with Poa, though that's his putting surface. And then, lo and behold, they go across to Detroit last week. He's working his way through the FedEx Cup. He was way out of the FedEx Cup when they were playing on Bermuda. And as soon as they've got up country to some Poa, to some bent grass, some mix of the both, all of a sudden the results have come from Noren. It's just you can see these kind of trends when you look closely at players. I think he's a great shout for this week. We'll get into that in a minute. If you're looking at the scoring levels here, I mean, they always tend to be in the top 12, 10 easiest scoring golf course TPC Deer Run. I don't see that being any different. We're basically looking at wide fairways. They're 36 yards, 300 yards off the tee. This is even wider than last week. And it's just set up for scoring effectively. Fratelli won at 21 under last year. 2019, because they didn't play this in 2020. Michael Kim was that extreme 27 under. Bryson won his maiden PGA Tour victory here at 18 under. And then you get the real kind of plotters. Ryan Moore at 22 under. Spieth at 20 under. Brian Harman, another plotter, 22 under. Spieth won his maiden PGA Tour event here at 19 under. Zach Johnson at 20 under, Steve Stricker 22 and 26 under par in 2010. 26 under par, that's just mad. That's just incredible. So yeah, Plotter's in there. Just, you know, and also when you were looking at Stricker when he won here, the three and the trot, Zach Johnson, they'd also been winners in the season prior to them actually winning this. And actually, I think that they kind of won. I think Zach had won at Colonial, Steve Stricker won at Memorial, one of the years he won this. So, you know, if we had a better quality field, you could say some of the recent winners would get involved this week. Betting-wise, Daniel Berger. Bet365 just seemed to have gone this morning. They're dominating on price. It has to be said at the John Deere Classic. So you've got your five places each way, according to the industry standard. But, you know, on most players this week, Bet365 are biggest or at least equal joint biggest price. They are 11-1 on Berger. Everyone else, 9-1. That's just crazy, really. Brian Harman at 14s. Now, I wouldn't call Brian Harman a kind of machine when it comes to winning. He's won twice, one of them here, so yeah, I get that. Sung Jae-im at 18s with Bet365. He's 16s across most. Russell Henley, who we know is a bit of a knee knocker when he's in contention, you can get him at 20 to 1. He's 16 under with a lot of firms. And then Kevin Streelman at 25-1. It kind of shows you what we're up against this week. There's a lot of very overpriced golfers there, in my opinion. But, you know, they've got to put someone up as favourite, haven't they? Yeah. Cam Davis, 28-1 after winning last week. Seamus Power, Barry, 33-1. He is the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, seventh placed favourite, Seamus Power. Are you on? That's what everyone is asking.
Absolutely. I shot myself in the foot by leaving Rahm alone at the US Open because of price and maybe, let's not talk about the COVID doubt, but and I think I did it earlier this season as well. I just got price proud or whatever it was. I can't jump ship now. I'm here for it. So if he tanks this week and it doesn't work, so be it. But I'm not missing out.
In my mind, I was always going to put Power up last week and this week. I've jumped off this week, so I expect he gets his maiden PGA Tour victory.
Steve, we appreciate your service. Thank you.
Right, I've done you a favour. I want at least 20% of your winnings.
Well, do you want to give me 20% of the stake?
Yeah, I could do. Maybe we'll do it that way. The Bamford Kiss of Death is off Seamus Power. So, yes, I mean, he ticks all that. I mean, he's ticking every box, really. But I suppose I've got a bit price proud with him, which is the new phrase for the Golf Betting System podcast. But, yeah, I sent you the numbers yesterday, didn't I? I gave you a little... He is on my 8-week trackers. He's tied first for strokes gained current form with Hank Lebioda. He's also number one for strokes gained tee to green in this field. So, yeah.
And
difficult to argue against the guy, isn't it?
Tied ninth in strokes gained putting. It's a really good combination. It hurts that he's been cut all the way to 33-1. I mean, looking at the top of the market, I mean, would you take John Rahm at 8-1 in the Scottish Open or Daniel Berger at 9-1 in this? Like, it's a bit wild. And, you know, based on Alex Noren's result last week, I'd have thought you'd have seen him a little bit higher up. But
that's why I've taken him.
It's a weak field. It really is. I mean, I don't think that... Look, it is where it is in the calendar, but it really doesn't help anybody... You don't think it helps people that much in terms of switching their game across to a Lynx style of golf for next week. So
I think some of the names, if you like, and there aren't many in this field, I think a lot of them probably are turning up here to have a nice round of golf before heading to hell in their mind at the Open Championship.
Maybe.
And it's nice to get across to the UK on a free jet provided by John Deere. So I don't know if some of the very big, well, very big names, there aren't any very big names in it, but I don't know if some of the names aren't kind of just using this event more as a, well, I can play and hop across to the UK and then come back. And I don't know if they're, if their real mind or heart's going to be in it. But for someone like Seamus Power, he's all in. He's got a PGA Tour card to play for. And I genuinely think that for someone like Alex Noren, because he never won in the United States. He's in the Open Championship, yes, so that's great. But again, I keep saying this. I think there's still a spot, at least a spot up for grabs on the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah.
And all it needs is Noren to go, you know, nuts at the moment and fourth last week, a shot out of the playoff, win this week, go and finish in the top 10 at the Open Championship. This is all very capable for Alex Noren. It's all very possible for him. And all of a sudden, he's a real name in that Ryder Cup conundrum for Padraig Harrington. So I'm on Noren. I can, again, his numbers are very, very impressive right now. I'm seeing Alex Noren fifth in strokes gained current form. I'm seeing him in the top 13 for strokes gained putting. And I'm also seeing him in the top 12 for strokes gained tee to green over the last 8 weeks. And as we saw last week, 18 under, I think on these kind of bent grass golf tournaments where you have to shoot low scores, I think that's kind of his MO at the moment. So yeah, I'm on Alex Noren. He's my headline selection this week at 33-1. I got seven places each way with Boyles, Alex Noren, 2 points each way. I just think that him and a Seamus Power, they're turning up at this with real focus. And I think that could be half the battle for players, you know, named players. Just, you know, they're not turning up to go through the sort of, just through the routine and I'm just playing it because I want to get to the Open. It's kind of, they want to do something this week.
Yeah.
So I'm on the prize as well, isn't it? It's a big prize because it's not an alternate event. It's not a watered down prize fund or points total. It's big business for these guys to go out and win this week.
It's 500 FedEx Cup points. It's a 2-year exemption. And for Alex Noren, it would be that question that he's constantly asked. And he was asked it again yesterday, or on Sunday. You know, oh, you've come very close to winning in the United States. You know, when are you going to win over here? And he instantly gets on the defensive and says, you know, well, I've won 10 times on the European Tour.
But those until they count. Get that first... Those don't yeah, count on the PGA Tour.
Clearly doesn't count. If you haven't won on the PGA Tour, you're nothing. So
they
he
don't
constantly
care.
Gets asked that question. It must drive him crazy.
Oh, that putt he hit on 18 was not good. It was a fast putt, but wow, yeah.
I think he's there or thereabouts, though. I think he's there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
I don't think he's far away. And when you actually look at Noren and what he tends to do when he wins, a lot of his wins come off a
hot streak,
contending or semi-contending performance the very week before he wins.
Mm.
That happens a lot when you just look at the victories he's had. And also with the victories he's had over here, as I said, all bent grass, all mixed with power. It's all that kind of North Europe type of agronomy on the greens. I just think this course is going to suit him. I really do. Right, the other thing to point out here is a bit of feast or famine with names. But I'm just going through FedEx Cup rankings here when they won. Dylan Fratelli, 154. He beat Russell Henley and Andrew Landry. They were 165 and 171 in the FedEx Cup as they arrived here at the John Deere Classic. So in deep, deep trouble in terms of the FedEx Cup. Year before that, Michael Kim was 161 in the FedEx Cup. He beat Bronson Bagoon, of all people. He was 134th in the FedEx Cup. You're seeing a pattern here. There was also Sam Ryder at 148, who finished in the top four. The year before that, Bryson DeChambeau, he wasn't exactly, you know, this is Bryson in 2017. He was 114th in the FedEx Cup. So only 10 places within the cutoff. He beat Patrick Rogers at 107 and Rick Lamb, of all people, 206th in the FedEx Cup. So you've got players here who are seriously scrambling for their cup, any kind of playing privileges. So that got me thinking. No, Seamus Power clearly falls into that category. We have already discussed where he's in the FedEx Cup.
Again, we thank you for not picking him.
Thank you. If he wins, I'll take a lot of credit for that. But I'm throwing in then some players that are outside the 125. So I've thrown in Bo Hosler, point each way, 66 to 1 with Paddy Power, 8 places each way. He's been playing some nice golf recently. He was as low as 166 after a miscut of the AT&T Byron Nelson. But he still finds himself at 144 on the FedEx Cup standings, coming in off form of 19th at the Palmetto, 10th at the Travelers, and 25th last week at the Rocket Mortgage. And I just think Hosler, again, low scoring, upstate. I think Hosler could go well, 66 to 1 on him. I'm getting really random now. Jim Herman, Donald Trump's favourite golfer. Now, if there's one thing you say about Jim Herman, you've told me this in the past, Paul, knows how to get over the line.
He can win, can't he?
He is very TPJ, isn't he? You won't hear from him for months. And then all of a sudden, bang, he wins. He's a three-time winner on the PGA Tour. 2016 Shell Houston Open, 2019 Barbasol on bent grass greens, 2020, last year, the Wyndham Championship. And he won those last two at 26 under par and 21 under par. And actually, over the last 8 weeks, I am seeing him quite visual in terms of my trackers. I'm actually seeing, and I almost fell on the floor when I read this number, he's actually in the top 14 for strokes gained putting over the last 8 weeks. This is Jim Herman, who's one of the worst putters known to man. So we're seeing him in the top 14 for putting, and he's also in the top, where are we looking? Oh, he's in the top 25, I think he is, or something like that. I'll actually read this through and do this properly rather than just skin it. 11th for greens in regulation, 5th for driving, actually, bearing in mind it's a plotter's golf course. 12th for strokes gained off the tee, and he's 14th for strokes gained tee to green. So actually, he's in the top 15 for both tee to green and putting. So I'm adding him 125 to 1 on Jim Herman. And I think he's ranked out at 180 something on the FedEx Cup. Oh, he's 176. So Herman's in. A couple of top 25s his last two events. He's probably playing too well, really, but there you go. And finally, Kevin Tway, of my FedEx Cup kind of outsiders. I think he's down at 190-something on the FedEx Cup. But he just started to show signs last week. I think he was top 12 or something like that going into the final round and ended up coming in the top 20. But yeah, Kevin Tway, 300 to 1. I've gone half a point each way, 8 places each way with Paddy Power on Kevin Tway. When you're looking at correlating golf courses, I don't know why this is. I've got no idea whatsoever. But there seems to be some kind of correlation between Silverado, where they play the Safeway Open, and here. We've had Ryan Moore, who's a winner here. He's finished second at Silverado. Michael Kim had a top 5 at Silverado before winning this. And there's a whole list of players that have... Patrick Rogers has finished 6th at Silverado, 2nd here. He's another one that might do something this week, Rogers, because he's in dire FedEx Cup problems. But yes, I've gone for Kevin Tway, who actually won the 2019 Safeway Open at Silverado. 300 to 1 on Tway. And then two mid-prices... Johnny Vegas, who I think is kind of the... Johnny Vegas and low scoring go hand in hand. Second recently at the Palmetto. He actually made the cut at the US Open. Johnny Vegas. I mean, US Opens and Johnny Vegas don't go in the same sentence, in my opinion. But he actually... That was his first major championship finish since 2018, I believe. Just playing some nice golf. I mean, he's second in Puerto Rico behind Brandon Grace. He was second in Palmetto behind Garrick Higo. And he was third here in 2013. Again, second for greens in regulation, first for off the tee, eighth for approach, fourth for tee to green, 17th for strokes gained current form last 8 weeks. I could see Johnny Vegas. He's two-time winner of the RBC Canadian Open at Glen Abbey, which I think is a similar course to this as well. Tree-lined, classical, low scoring. He won the second one of those at 21 under par. He won the Bob Oak Classic at 27 under par, his maiden PGA Tour victory. And the other one I fired in there is Hot Fire Patton Kizzire. He finished, didn't he, 64 on Sunday when the wind laid down. Just went absolutely nuts. 8 under par, 64. The same score as Alex Noren.
And yeah, we've been cracking final round.
Well, I know that you guys were sniffing around Kizzire earlier this year, and he's had a couple of third places, didn't he? One at Colonial, one at that Byron Nelson, where KH Lee won at 25 under par. I think this is kind of perfect MO for Kizzire. Just go out there and make as many birdies as you want. Whether he can hang around when it's blowing 25 mile an hour on Sunday remains to be seen. But I could see Kizzire being right up there. So those are my selections. Noren, Kizzire, Johnny Vegas, Bo Hosler, Jim the Herminator Herman, and Kevin Tway. Who are you sprinkling your little stakes on at the John Deere Classic this week, boys?
There you go, Barrett.
Well, I didn't sprinkle very much further.
You've gone balls deep on Seamus.
Yeah, well, I'm heavy enough on Seamus. I gotta make a count if it really does catch. So I added one more, and he kind of fits into that outside the top 125. I haven't done the maths on it now because I'm just kind of coming up with the angle, but he's probably running out of his exemption. Showed flashes there a couple of weeks ago, getting off to a hot start, and I think he nearly got first round leader. But Satoshi Kodaira, so yeah. He's very hot in your putting stats, and yeah. He's also good off the tee at the moment, so. Just kind of merging those together. Hopefully as a half decent week with the irons gives himself enough opportunities to let that putter work. But I was able to get him at, was it 125 to 1, 7 places. I got a little bit greedy taking the price, but so that's it. Seamus and Satoshi.
He keeps flashing Kodaira, doesn't he?
Yeah,
good stuff, isn't he?
I've added him. First round leader. So himself and Seamus, first round leader. So
Kodaira is 147.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he's fighting for his life, and yeah, the exemption's long gone. I think the win exemption. It will certainly be gone at the end of this year. So yeah, he's fighting for his PGA Tour. Yeah, Kodaira's. He seems to get that first round leader bet. He's all over it, isn't he, at the moment?
Keep
getting off to a super fast start. So hopefully he can hang around for him. What about you, Paul?
Yeah, I did. Interesting with Kodaira. I'd not really considered him, but he'd been on my radar a few weeks back, so I'll take a look at him. It's a good shout, Barry, I think. Going back to Seamus, 60 to 1, I'm seeing first round leader with Unibet and the different Canby outfits as well. So given that he's 33 to 1 outright, yeah, he does have this ability to start quickly. It's a Monday qualifier as well, and a one round affair, quick. When the pressure's under, I wonder if first round leader might be the market for Seamus this week at that kind of price. But the two I've backed outright, Pat Perez, who sat atop of your predictor model this week, Steve, 80 to 1, 7 places each way. And he loves a birdie fest as well, doesn't he?
He does. You love Pat Perez as well.
Yeah, I do.
He's up there with Matthew Southgate for you, isn't he?
Bit addicted to Pat Perez on a birdie fest. The 10th at the Palmetto recently, 14th at the Rocket Mortgage last week, first for strokes gained putting last week at the Rocket Mortgage, which if you're going to come into a birdie fest and you're leading the field of 4 strokes gained putting, then that's not a bad place to be, I don't think. 4th here on his debut back in 2002, back in the dim and distant past. He has got some very old course form, but more interested in that putting spark that we saw last week from Pat Perez.
He was eighth after 54 holes at the Palmetto, and he was sixth last week at the Rocket Mortgage after 54 holes. So that's the kind of form that you want to win this.
Yeah, he was third to Strokes Gained Approach at the Palmetto, which, again, you know, if Strokes Gained Approach, three starts back, first for Strokes Gained Putting last week.
Mm.
Ties that together, he's going to get to about 34 under par.
No, he's a good shout. He's one of those that was on my shortlist that I scraped off. So, yeah.
We shall see. Pat Perez and also Robert Strebov backed 125-1 with 8 places. There's a little bit more if you fancy a 5 placer, but I've taken Barry's advice finally and gone for 125 with 8 places instead. He's done all right here in the past. He was 6th, 7th and 10th after the first day on 3 consecutive years back in 2013 through 15. 11th into the weekend in 2017 before missing the second cut. Opened and closed with a 67 last week. Some half-decent form, I think. 9th to Sunday at the Travellers. 11th into the weekend at the Charles Schwab as well. So some recent enough decent form. Won the RSM back in November. Shot a 61 in the second round that week. Won at 19 under par. So can get go low, can finish with can produce a low total altogether. So, I thought 125-1 on Streb was too big. And also, like your Jim Herman shout as well, Steve, I agree, he is the sort who can actually convert when the opportunity is presented to him as well. So, a few outsiders for me this week.
Jim Herman's the kind, you know, when you're looking at Betfair on like a Saturday morning, and Jim Herman's kind of at the top of the leaderboard, but he's like 7th place on the betting. No one will ever fancy him until he actually gets the winning putt. But yeah, 3-time winner. And two of them at crazy low scoring events.
Yeah, I think the last one, he actually produced an incredible weekend. He kind of came in around about the cut line or just ahead of it and then just went absolutely bananas over the Saturday.
At the Wyndham.
Yeah, it was at the last one he won.
It was the Wyndham down in South Carolina. Yeah. He shot 61-63 Saturday, Sunday.
That tends to work at the weekend.
That's craziness. Beat Billy Horschel, Kevin Kisner and Webb Simpson. I mean, there's some names there, aren't there? Dot Redman and Siwoo Kim.
Yeah, Jim Herman. This week.
Well, this is it, and you get so many of these players that get to the top of the leaderboard and crumble, like a Harold Varner. I'm just using him as an example. But then you've got someone like Jim Herman that misses cuts, like 8 straight missed cuts, gets in contention and beats Horschel, Kisner, Simpson, Redman, and Siwoo Kim. Madness. A closer. I'm on.
Yep.
Well, thank you for your time. We are going to be recording our Open Championship Research podcast later this week, so listen out for that. I wish you the very best of luck, chaps, with your bets this week. Let's hope for some real luck. Clearly, Seamus is going to win, so everything will turn out okay. We've also got a situation, of course, where the Open podcast later this week and then early next week. We're not 100% certain when we're going to record it, but early next week, we will be going through our selections for next week's Open. It's been a pleasure.
Best of luck, guys.
Best of luck, everybody.
Best of luck to listeners. Thank you. And, of course, as ever, please give us your 5-star reviews. We'll see you soon. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved. With all the stats and the tips and so much more, 'cause it's the golf betting system, the golf